accession number 18839, Reel 2.
One instance I remember, at Dunkirk, when he was waiting to for the transport, the ship, there was one fellow must have gone into what was left of the ruins of a cafe on the side, on the front, and he must have found some cognac and got absolutely blind drunk, and he came out to join the queue with holding an old bugle, and he started playing this bugle saying, "Talk about treating, I'll send the F in charge." And the padre came up to steady boy and took some, coaxed him back into the line. Or he was just one in a bed, absolutely blotto, you know. Yeah. So it got to him, I suppose.
Anyhow, we're going forward now on your journey back across the channel.
Yes, right.
Because you went over to the beaches.
That's right.
Day beaches, didn't you?
That's right. As I say, we were we moved down to just above Portsmouth on the hilltops there, and awaiting the actual day to arrive. And we used to sit on top of the cliffs, looking out across, we'll be going across there, and I think we'll be there probably about 10 days, and then the weather, I think, changed, didn't it? And they thought, oh, it's going to be put off, but then I think there was a gap, and it was all moved, and then we knew it had started, and we moved down to the embarkation point.
Was that in Portsmouth Harbour?
Yes, on the harbour, just above the harbour, and that was towards the evening. We moved in, and just as we were embarking, the first lot of boatloads come back, bringing back the wounded. I mean, D-Day must have been the most horrific thing at the time, you see. So,
was this D-Day itself, or the day after?
This is on the evening of D-Day, uh-huh. as we're about to leave.
Yeah.
The actual wounded were being brought back, and we went overnight from Portsmouth, and next morning we woke when we went. We saw all the. You can't imagine unless you're there the actual armada of ships all across the. Where the beach, you know, miles out, mile after mile, and they're blazing away with their guns, naval guns, and we sail through the ships, and then I was really amazed the way, the ease at which, on deepest when the landings went, once they cleared the beach, those beach masters they did a marvellous job. They cleared the beach of their wounded and dead, and they got down at this sort of wire strips down over the sands for the vehicles to get up.
Well, the steel matting, was it?
Steel matting, yes. So, but I mean, organised, you know.
Cleared the mines, I suppose.
And cleared, yes, everything was cleared, and we just moved in, and we couldn't believe somebody directed us to our rendezvous point, and got us wrong, and the next thing we saw, the armour was going up on top of over a little hill, and that was actually the front line. And we, of course, if you think they only got a bridgehead about 5 to 6 miles deep then, so you know, you couldn't afford to make mistakes, you'd be behind the lines, you know, and apparently it was fantastic.
So which beach did you land on?
Gold, I think.
You went on Gold.
Yeah.
And that was what, the easternmost beach was? There was Gold, Sword.
There was Gold, then Sword. Yeah, that's
and
right.
Near
Alamance's part, that's right. And we sort of camp in more or less an orchard place, you know, and we're there for, until the extra breakout came.
Did you actually go up to the Falaise Gap or not?
We went after the battle, Falaise. We heard the old typhoons going over, you know, rocket fires, and then when we moved out, the actual scene on that road from Falaise Gap was horrendous. I mean, there's German transport wrecked by the side, just the side of the road. And then we went so far, and we had to pause in France for a while in order to catch up with actually maps, basically. They decided to run out of maps after the breakthrough, you know. But the actual Falaise area was dead, the cattle in the fields, bloated in the sun, you know, really horrible.
What supplies were you carrying? I mean, when you went in on the beaches and so on, you were driving what, 3-ton trucks, were they, or what?
Three-ton trucks, mate. Yeah, three ton, and yeah, and of course you had to set up these supply column points, you know, issuing points with bring up the rations when they actually got settled in.
And you presumably followed the armies all the way up through Holland, did you?
Well, yes. I mean, as I say, when the breakthrough came, I think we moved about nearly 200 miles right up through France into the first real setup we had was just about 10 miles south of Brussels. Eventually we finished up it, and my officer in charge said, "Would you want to go? I'd like to go into Brussels tonight?" Because they'd liberated it that same day. And he said, I can get you in, and I can't get you back. You have to find your own transport back." So we went in, got into Brussels, and absolutely mobbed, you know. And eventually had a few drinks and faded everywhere he went, and time changed to try and get back to our camp. No idea which road to take, but, and we hoped to get some transport going back, and we happened to fall in with some of these resistance,
yeah.
And they said, "Oh, you won't get back today, tonight." He said, "I know where you can get some transport back tomorrow. I'll take you to some of my your friends." And they took us down some side road and down into a cellar, sort of. And they are armed to the teeth. So they had these 50 resistance folks sitting up in one corner with about 3 or 4 medics. They brought the ambulances up to the hospital, and we got lift back to Hull, a place called Hull, I think it was, and the next day.
Did you have to transport prisoners back? Was that part of your job?
No, I didn't.
Did you see many Germans, live ones?
Not many, no. Well, we saw them being back, like as prisoners. And we saw a heck of a lot when we got into Germany. We were on Lüneburg Heath, you know, that was just before, that's where the armistice they were signed. And they said we did get a lot then, because they... One of the German officers came with a white flag to surrender, and he said, "I've got a few want to do, want to surrender. And instead of being about one, two, about three, or several hundred, and up in, hiding in the woods around Lüneburg. But they were Episcopal state, old men and young lads, that's all that was left, more or less.
That, well, you had to feed them,
I had to sort of send them to a camp way back, see. They were very glad to be out of it.
So most of the advance across Europe, I mean, were you sitting behind a desk a lot of the time?
Not really. No. We didn't have time to set up base, you know. Yeah. We just had to...
So, I mean, you had a sort of... What was your supply system? I mean, you had... your supply routes went to Antwerp, did they, originally? Where, you know, when you got up into Belgium. Because they had to open up Antwerp, didn't they?
Mind you, most of the stuff had to come over Mulberry.
Mulberry, so it was still coming up from France.
Yeah, most of it, most of the time. That was more or less the way it had to be until we got established in Germany, you know, and Antwerp fell.
So it was quite a long supply route then, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. So it was quite a way.
And you had absolutely everything had to come, ammunition, food.
Yeah, and if it hadn't been, if Mulberry had got, there was a storm one night that nearly destroyed it. That could have made a heck of a lot of difference to the outcome, mate.
When you were planning D-Day, when you were in London in Astley Gardens, I mean, did you know about Mulberry then or not?
No, didn't know about that. We knew about Pluto.
I was going to say, you had this petrol pipeline
That was part of the secret plan. But it was really well thought out. But as I say, we are only a little piece in the jigsaw. You know, the overall picture you really couldn't see. But it was.
Where were you on VE Day when it was all finished? Were you at Lüneburg or?
No. Oh, there's another chapter. Then, of course. After the war ended, we didn't just go home. We got to finish the job, and then the question of Berlin came up, and a party of us was detached to go into Berlin to set up an administration there. And I was allocated to the Deputy Pavel Marshal's office in Berlin, which is very interesting, basically. And I spent from about, winding in May, about June or July, till I was demobbed in February, June 1945. Till February 1946.
You were in Berlin.
Yeah, and it was at Berlin when we knew when Japan, you know, the end of the war.
VJ Day. What were your memories of Berlin at that time?
Well, the actual Berlin, it's the most dismal place because it was all. I don't think of the house that was not damaged. You know, we were actually in blocks of flats, but a lot of it was windows blown in, things like that. But this destruction was terrific. I mean, no idea really.
We were
in the Charlottenburg area, you know, of Berlin. Some of the actual cafes were still going on, though, strangely enough, in the Kafirsten Dam. Used to go there.
You were in blocks of flats, you say?
Yeah.
I mean, were they habitable?
Well,
did they have glass in the windows, that sort of thing?
No, they were like boarded up, as they had to be boarded up, but they weren't too bad. But as I say, the actual main buildings were a lot in ruins, you know. But the most ruined place when we was Khan. That Khan just disappeared in the battle for the beachhead, you know. It was just, the road had disappeared, just all the rubble had gone into the main road, main street.
Yeah.
And
because when you were in Berlin, presumably you weren't allowed to fraternise, were you?
No, strictly was opposed to, but it went on. I mean, they couldn't stop it.
I mean, was there much black market operating then?
Oh, yes. There was active cigarettes were the currency in Germany, particularly in Berlin. You know, I mean, they could get anything. I think packet of cigarettes would cost, we were about, in those days, quite a lot of money, would be about £15 or something like that, in equivalent. I mean, blokes were getting like a cameras for
a camera?
Like the old German, Leica, yeah. Like a camera, for about 50 cigarettes.
Yeah. Mm.
Anything, they bartered, you know, to get cigarettes, and cigarettes was the currency.
Was there a lot of hunger there? Have you noticed?
Well, things were pretty tight. I mean, the lucky ones, the ones that were employed like civilians by the army, like they got some rations, I suppose. They clamoured for jobs. But the amazing thing is, when we went into Berlin to take over our sector, it was four sectors, to take over our sector, they got the old Union Jacks out. The Germans were waving Union Jacks because they had to get rid of the Russians as their sector.
Did you have anything to do with the Russians?
Not a lot, no.
I mean, you met them, obviously.
Oh, you met them, yes, but you didn't.
What was your impression of the ones you met?
Well, you had to be careful of them because they, for instance, if they wanted to rob you, they wouldn't think twice. I mean, one or two have been threatened with a gun, you know. And they've sort of knocked them out or something like that, but I've heard of, you know, a little clashy with, one or two clashy with, because they, a lot of the Russians, they were, I suppose they come from a very low background, you know. They don't seem to, not very intelligent, to put it crudely.
So you were demobbed when you came back from Berlin. Did you go back to your old job?
No, I couldn't face it going inside. Solicitor's office, it didn't appeal to me. I went on insurance, actually, for outside job.
On what?
I went on insurance. Rep.
You went out on the road?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Looking back of it, I mean, back on that time, I mean, what did it do to you as a person, do you think, over years?
Well, put it this way, I mean, going back to 39, when I was a raw recruit, if you might say, you just sort of, you grew up overnight, basically, you know what I mean? Although I was 21, you weren't really, you didn't really know much about life, but you learned a lot later on, mixing with people, you know.
Because you saw your first dead body at Dunkirk.
Oh, yes, many of them, yes. They were just huddled together, but you could see them in lines, you know. But as I say, or he'll tell you. It's a funny thing, I went through all through the war and thought nothing of what I'd seen. And when I came back, I came back in flashbacks. Dunkirk came back in flashbacks. Not so much Normandy, but Dunkirk was the actual thing.
Still, really?
Well,
unpleasant memories?
Nightmares of it, you see. It all came back again, you know. Yeah.
Have you has he talked much to you about his experiences?
Yeah, quite a lot, yes. Yeah. But
sometime
it's difficult. I can understand the man must have been traumatised almost, because it was something that overnight they were thrown into this awful, terrible.
Yeah.
It's difficult for ordinary people to understand what they must have.
And as I say, I really hit bottom at Dunkirk, if you think about it. And somebody who's 21 hasn't lived and think, I'm going to die here. It's a terrible thought, you know, when you think about it. And they got that stretch of water to get across, and that's all stood between you and safety, basically.
And you didn't think you were going to make it?
No.
And of course, a lot of guys were left behind, weren't they?
Oh, yeah.
Marched into the prisoner of war camp. Did you get many French soldiers coming across with you?
No, not many. I tell you what did upset people, and I saw it as a confidential letter came through that deplored the fact that the first boatloads of survivors from Dunkirk contained 90% officers. And that's one thing we didn't see on the... I never saw an officer. The only officer, the only one we saw was a padre on the beach.
What, on your trawler?
No, in the actual queue, in the actual lines. We didn't see any officer giving any commands. Only when they started to move forward. But, I mean, that says something, that the first 90% of the officers were on the first boat to get back.
What about when you were coming back on the trains, you know, and so on? I mean, were there officers helping to look to see that you've got all you needed and so on?
Well, frankly, I can't remember. I can't say, you know, there must probably
the
would
WVS
be.
The WVS did a lot of work, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, they were there daily, cups of tea and so on. So. One made a faux pas and asked if you had any sugar. Any sugar?
Was
that? Have you got any sugar, she said. Have you got your sugar? Because sugar was rationed.
Yeah. Well, they asked you if you had any.
Yeah. It had its lighter moments, even in as I say, I've dealt more or less with the summer moments, but there was little touching moments in when we were in... at Christmas, just before the war, when we were in Belgium, before the war, just before the end of the war, we gave up our chocolate ration to the kids in the local village, local town, and we put on a little party for them. And the look on those kids' faces when they hadn't seen chocolate or anything like that, well, did in England, did they, basically.
What were your feelings about the Germans, particularly in Berlin, you know, when they were finally crushed? I mean, was there a lot of animosity among you and your mates towards the Germans, or not necessarily?
Well, there was quite a bit, I suppose. If you imagine they'd taken about a few years out of your life, you know, wasted, not wasted, but, you know. The remarkable thing is, you talk to the Germans, nobody was a Nazi. They didn't support Hitler at all. Nobody was in the Nazi. So I don't know where they all were. And then there's another thing. We saw some of the we weren't actually at that particular spot. We didn't liberate it, but we saw the Tuklais coming from Belsen, and that was a horrific sight, you know.
About what survivors there were.
Mm. Human, just in open tucks, like being made, human skeletons practically. So then, when you saw that, you hadn't got much feeling for the Germans at all. In fact, anybody could do that to their fellow human beings. It's been terrible.
Well, Geoffrey, thank you very much. It's lots of very valuable memories there, I think we've got.
Yes, it keeps thinking of things.
As I say, you've given me sort of nearly an hour of memories, which is marvellous.
Good, yeah.
And they'll be preserved, you know.
Yes, I hope it comes out all right, you know.
I think it will do. Thank you very much. Yeah. Anyway.